Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, nearly 3 hours long. Leonardo DiCaprio attended the premiere, and by the end, his date was too old for him. So...
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Sitting Around Talking Movies. Happy New Year. It's our first broadcast of 2020. I'm Neil Rosen, sitting around with, as always, Bill Bregoli.
I took my private jet here.
And Bill Bregoli.
And Bill Bregoli. It's Bill Bregoli and Bill Bregoli.
Yes, and Bill McCuddy.
And his evil twin. I'd like to thank the little people.
There you go. And we're going to look at the Golden Globes, which we're recording the show on Monday.
Importantly, what we learned from them going forward in terms of the broadcast critics and the Oscars.
Right, if anything. Critics' Choice Awards and what's
have a future peg when you talk. That's always the smartest thing to
what's
do.
What's the smartest thing?
Look forward, not backward.
Yes, that's true. Right. Well, that'll be the New Year's resolution is to talk into the microphone this year. Yeah. Well, you know, let's start. I'm going to start with, and that was Ricky Gervais that, as I said, that we led the show with. We could talk about, we'll go chronologically if you'd like.
Oh, good Lord. How long is this going to take?
He opened up the show with a monologue and he had a glass of beer sitting on his pedestal.
He did that before.
Yeah, he's done that before.
You know, it seemed to me, you know, first of all, he looked very, which he made no bones about. He goes, like, I want to get out of here, and this is the last time I'm doing it. And he seemed
I think they pulled him aside after that monologue and informed him that it really was the last time he was doing it.
Well, I don't know. I remember when he did it a couple of times ago before that, he made some really offensive remarks, and they said, we're never having Ricky Gervais back again.
But it was cute and with a smile and with a wink, and last night it just looked like they had a gun to his head.
He looked really bored. I mean, he looked like, let's get... And then he starts lecturing the audience. By the way, there was a tweet from Ricky Gervais today saying, thank you so much for all the great comments about my monologue last night from everybody. And I'm overwhelmed by...
I sent him some jokes.
Well, he said, I'm overwhelmed by the outpouring of, praise, and it means so much to me, and... Yeah, I don't know. You know, I didn't think the guy did. I mean, I didn't think he was terrible, but I didn't think.
I don't think your jokes landed, but I thought he made a lot of good points.
They didn't land in the room. It reminded me of like the correspondence dinner when a couple of people like Seth Meyers and Michelle Wolf have stood up there and made jokes that didn't play in the room, and Trump scowled at a bunch of things. And I think that's exactly what happened last night at the Golden Globes. You had the stars there in the room, half of whom who've worked with Felicity Huffman. And he opens with a joke about coming there in a limo that the license plate was made by Felicity Huffman. And like, that's going to be a tough room to get that joke to land in. But you're right. Here we are the next day with all of these editorials saying that he really took Hollywood to task and really called him out. And I kind of agree with Neil. It's like at the time, it didn't play in the room. And if it doesn't play in the room, you're not really succeeding as an MC. So the next day, we can say that he made a lot of good points, and I think he did. You shouldn't be flying here on jets, as you made a joke about at the top. You shouldn't be hypocritical and two-faced and blah, blah, blah.
He really went a step further. I mean, he was actually like scolding the audience and saying, you know nothing.
You know what it was?
You know, you're an actor. You're actors. You don't know anything about how the world works, which is kind of... You know, I mean, there's a couple thousand people in the room. How do you know who knows how the world works? I mean, I understand that people have always said that actors shouldn't get on a soapbox and, but they do have a platform to talk to millions of people, and some are informed, some aren't. But, I mean, he was going, you know nothing about how the world works.
He was
works.
Grumbly. He wanted a piece of steak, and they weren't serving that.
Yeah, right.
Well, apparently, who praised...
Brad Pitt got up and said it was nice to be vegan.
Yeah, lovely.
A couple of people mentioned that,
actually.
Sure,
their own private chefs fed them after they got home.
You know, I just think that, in a small way, the three of us are a little out of touch, too. I mean, we go to all of these screenings. We go to all of these things. This is our business, and it's what we do. I think Middle America spoke today when they said, we really liked Ricky Gervais because he yelled at those assholes in Hollywood. And I thought it landed badly in the room, and I thought there could have been a better host. But guess what? A lot of people today disagree. A lot of people think that was the bitch slapping that Hollywood's deserved for a long time.
But it didn't seem to matter. I mean, there were some people made political speeches regardless. It's not like, oh, I better not make a speech. Ricky Gervais... specifically said.
And nobody called him out on it. Nobody yelled at him when they were up there, except the Hollywood Foreign Press guy came out and said, you've said you're doing this for the last time. Can we get that in writing, Mr. Gervais? Which was actually a pretty funny joke.
Yeah. Although, you know, as I say, you know, I remember a couple of years ago when he hosted, and they were saying, well, we're never having this guy back again. You know what I mean? So I don't know. And then a year goes by, and look, he said it's the last time that he's doing it. But, you know, I mean, it's not like he's an old guy. That, you know, he might.
No, the way he did those jokes last night, and they don't want to come back for that. I mean, the stars will be like, let's get somebody, you know, funny and young
and
cool.
Bring back Tina Fey. I can hear it already.
Yeah. Well, they were great when Tina Fey and Amy Poehler hosted it. But, you know, I think that he had a look on his face the whole way through that I don't want to be here. And, you know, he was very, very down on the whole thing. It wasn't like, certainly wasn't Billy Crystal hosting or Hugh Jackman.
No, but he doesn't want to be that. And I think, you know, mission accomplished there. They're certainly not going to ask him to host the Oscars. And speaking of that, like, what did, for a couple of really big headlines out of last night, first of all, 1917?
Yeah.
I mean, whoa, that was like a huge stunner in two categories.
So you write, Bill McCuddy, for the website goldderby.com. And my question here is that the Golden Globes does not always reflect what the Academy is going to do. I mean, Pia Zadora.
It's less of a joke than it was in the Pia Zadora days.
And Madonna winning for Evita, you know. But the point is, so does 1917. I checked Gold Derby right before we started doing this, and I don't think they've updated the site that much, but do you think that 1917 now moves into the forefront of a best picture? I mean, Sam Mendes beat out Martin Scorsese, and 1917
and Noah Baumbach,
wins best picture in the drama category. So is that now become the front runner, or does it have no impact whatsoever?
It helps because Oscar voting is today and tomorrow.
Yeah, Tuesday. Yeah, as we're sitting here, it's in the next 24 hours.
I'm waiting for my email that's not asking for me to send.
Have you gotten a ballot to vote?
No, I haven't got. We're talking about the Critics' Choice Awards, right. The things that we, and that's this weekend, right?
Yeah, we should be.
Well, I started thinking about it.
I already got my dues.
Okay. I started thinking
Sucker.
About it, and I started after 1917.
Neil hasn't paid dues for 10 years. Just
no,
don't pay
I paid dues. And I said, you know, none of the movies up there like are really like wow, like a Titanic. By the way, that was a good line last night when Brad Pitt goes, to Leonardo DiCaprio, I would have shared the raft. I thought that was actually a funny line. But you know, none of the movies. Like Titanic, like Forrest Gump, like one of these movies where you just go like, yeah, that's a lock. That's going to win the Academy Award. You know, The Irishman, is that going to be embraced by everybody? You know,
it wasn't last night.
Right. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Hollywood does love movies about Hollywood, you know, but, you know, Marriage Story. I don't know. I looked at 1917 winning and I said, you know, maybe this is the best picture of the year
I don't think it is the Oscar best voters who were underwhelmed by that movie and think that the trick of the single take that it tries to do there are actually two places it doesn't but that it stops and restarts but two that they're admitting to that they just think that the trick overshadows the actual story and so I'm not sure that it gets a huge push. I think, you know, it's certainly going to be looked at by people who haven't seen it up until now. We got it really late in the screening mailing.
Right. Well, look, Marriage Story, as we said in the last podcast, as I said, that's my favorite movie of the year. Do you think that has a shot at winning the Oscar for Best Picture, or is it really The Irishman? Is it still The Irishman versus Once Upon a Time in Hollywood? Is that your Oscar race for Best Picture?
Yeah, I think that it's gotten not bumped up a little, but remember, when you say Best Picture, we're talking probably at least 8, maybe 9, and possibly even 10 motion pictures. So, yeah, it's 1917 now. It was probably always going to be in the top 10.
How about Joker?
That'll be up there too, sure.
Does Joaquin Phoenix now?
Okay, well, let's talk about that. The Oscar voters do two things when they watch the Golden Globes. They do a shot every time someone makes a joke about a Kardashian or something in Vogue, and they look at the speeches that the stars make and whether they want to hear that speech again. And I'm telling you, they don't want to hear Joaquin Phoenix's speech again.
Yeah, he was terrible. You know, after I watched after the Golden Globes were over, after that Joaquin Phoenix speech, I actually, and it was this morning, I pulled this up on YouTube, and it was very interesting. I watched the prank that he pulled on Letterman when he pretended to be...
Well, like, he says that's a prank now.
Yeah, completely incoherent. No, it was a prank. And then I watched the follow-up when he was, like, normal. But, you know, he was kind of just rambling on and, you know, it was kind of incoherent.
Saying he's a pain in the ass, which, if you've interviewed him, he is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
we've all had that experience.
It's a self-awareness thing. That's good. But, so you think because... They don't like his speech. Well, his speech wasn't that political. I mean, it wasn't
No, but it rambled and it thanked all the wrong people and it didn't... look, it's... I'm telling you, they watch and they go, ah, that's a good Oscar speech and they... And it helps. It helps some people. That's
Speaking
all
of
I'm
thanking
saying.
People, Quentin Tarantino was called out for not really thanking anyone.
Yeah, well, that was his point. He's like normally in a...
No, he did. He said...
In a screenwriter, he said, you'd only have to thank yourself.
But then he thanked people. I mean, he thanked the cast and he thanked some of the... You know, and then graciously, when the movie won Best Musical or Comedy, he didn't even speak. He let
That's
the
gracious. No, that was David Heyman.
Yeah, he let the producer speak, which I thought was you know, a nice thing to do.
But I mean, that was the place that Jojo Rabbit, which, as you guys know, is my favorite movie of the year, or Dolomite. That was the place, musical or comedy, that it was going to jump up, and then. For Rocket Man to lose there, but have to have him win.
Yeah, well, he worked the room. He really has been working the awards. Taron Egerton has really been working the awards circuit. And I mean, I did a meet and greet with him at Paramount. A whole bunch of us did.
I've been thinking all year that
everybody,
that movie
I think he's
was
shaking
from last year.
Everybody's hand. I know.
I don't like that movie. Well, I don't like the fact that it's out of sequence. That
he did a great job of promoting himself because he's a generally nice person. At least that's the impression you get when you meet him. And he met everybody.
Elton John showed up with Bernie, and they got to get up there twice. And I have a feeling that's going to help the Oscar prospects for that song. I don't think the movie is a Best Picture nominee, but it might be.
Well, you know, there's a famous story. And I wasn't in the room when these Oscars took place, and quite a number of years ago when Dreamgirls was nominated. But Eddie Murphy was an odds-on favorite to win Best Supporting Actor for Dreamgirls, and apparently he was really pissed that he didn't win and didn't attend any of the after parties. I don't know. I think he left the... Some people say that he left the Oscar ceremony.
Some people say he got up when they announced the winner after that speech and left and come back. Right. I mean, I don't blame him.
So what happened last night, because they did not show Eddie Murphy, who was expected to win for Dolomite in that category, they did not show you Eddie Murphy after Taron Egerton won. They didn't even.
And he wasn't a presenter, which was kind of strange. Mm. Wesley Snipes went up, and I thought to myself, I wonder if he was supposed to do it.
Yeah.
And at the last minute, they swapped it out. You know, that would be really sad. And I don't think Eddie Murphy needs that kind of press. He's about to do a $70 million stand-up Netflix special. And I think he wants people to like him. It's why he went back and did Saturday Night Live. It's got its biggest ratings since 2011. So I'd be really disappointed to find out if he's a source.
Well, he's going to get this weekend
bad sport again.
At the Critics' Choice Award. He's regardless of whether he wins or loses for Dolomite, he's going to get one of those lifetime achievement things. So he will be honored at the Critics' Choice Awards, whether he wins or not. They're going to show you that Eddie Murphy clip reel, and you know, he's going to get to make a speech there. So regardless of whatever happens, he is going to get his moment in the sun.
That means he'll show up.
Yeah. But here's the thing that I found very interesting about after the Golden Globes last night, and I mentioned it to you both before we started doing this. And I wonder, Netflix didn't win anything except for Laura Dern for Marriage Story for Best Supporting Actress. And Netflix, I mean, my God, the money that Netflix is spending on promoting three movies, The Irishman, Marriage Story, and The Two Popes is incredible. I mean, they just want to win an Oscar so badly.
They flew some of our members out to California for a couple of junkets.
Do you think maybe they misspent when it came to the Hollywood Foreign Press? Because those folks are used to being wined and dined.
They are, but you know, guys, they also in a de facto category will lean towards the foreigner. They just always do. I don't know why this is a big surprise.
Taron Egerton being the foreigner?
Well,
he's British.
I mean... Okay, Laura Dern's not a foreigner, but there was nobody really up from... But like,
well,
A lot of the television categories, the woman who plays the queen,
Olivia Colman was it.
Yeah, Olivia Colman won. Like,
Fleabag wins, but we
Fleabag was
it.
Like, what the fuck? I mean, it's even they seemed surprised, and she got up there twice.
Well, they won all the Emmys. You know, Fleabag won the Emmys.
But it's over, right? There's no more
Fleabag?
Yeah, there's
two seasons of it, and it's done.
And there's still more Mrs. Maisel, so they kind of dumped on that.
Succession won. You know,
yeah, and there's Brian Cox. I mean, there's my foreign theory again. I mean, they seem to, you know, Phoebe Waller-Bridge from Fleabag, Remy Yosef from the Remy television.
Well, I didn't even, you know, it's funny. The guy wins. Rami, what's it? Rami
Yosef.
Right, and the show is called Rami, right?
Right.
Right. So the guy gets up there, and I'm going, I never even heard of this show. And
yeah, it wasn't a great showing for them, but I'm not sure they care.
Then he says to the room, I know none of you know my show. None of you have watched my show. So he's aware of the fact that nobody knows what this is, you know?
Right, and back to Gervais, he made a point early in the evening about how there are no more real movie companies. It's all streaming services. And then for them not to win anything was kind of a nice triumph for them.
Well, that's my question to you both, is that, when it's all said and done at the end of the day, are people, look, I know the Hollywood Foreign Press is a bizarre voting body to begin with, and how legitimate some of these people are.
They don't speak English. It's pretty funny that he said.
That's a whole discussion. But at the end of the day, is it going to be like, are the Oscars going to say, you know, we're not rewarding these movies that really are going straight to television? I mean, you stream them, you watch them on a computer or television or on your phone. I mean, big deal. They get a qualifying run. They're in a theater for a couple of weeks.
I don't know. The real answer to your question may be that from the back, there may be some backlash from all the money they spent last year and have started to spend this year.
Roma last year.
Roma was crazy with
pillows,
with the shit we got. this year, I got two Pope's slippers.
Yeah, I like them. They fit.
But then we got these.
I'm happy with mine.
What is the name of that publisher? Asseline.
Asseline.
These unbelievable coffee table books. One on Irishman and one on Marriage Story. I mean, these books. Like, I mean, I looked it up.
They're $200 to $300 books.
They're like,
yeah.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's like. Well, I looked it up on Asseline. It's at $175, but still, I mean, that's a very expensive.
That's
thing.
Marriage Story. The Irishman is $300, I think.
All right, well, regardless,
because I got $250 for it on eBay.
I see.
You did not try to sell
it. Just put four legs on it, and now it is a coffee table.
Boom. Michael Richards joke, very funny.
Well, yeah, it's a coffee table book. It's a coffee table. Michael Richards.
I mean, the answer is, I think that Oscar voters pick and choose from the Golden Globes. I'll go back to my point about the speeches, who they think deserves it, who they want it to go to. They don't have two categories, so Once Upon a Time in Hollywood now competes with the dramatic movies.
Once Upon a Time, what I'm saying is, do the Oscar voters still not accept? Last year, we had a big discussion, all of us, about the fact that it's a point, not pointed. Roma wasn't going to win because
it's a weighted
system. But I also said I don't think Roma's going to win because I think that, you know, Oscar voters at the end of the day do not want to vote for a movie that kind of just goes straight to streaming and is not getting a regular run in theaters, like an old kind of movie. And if you look at the Golden Globes, yeah, all traditional type movies. Once upon a time in Hollywood, not only was not streaming. Quentin Tarantino didn't even show it in a theater. Like, he showed, you know, what are those things in the upper right hand corner? They would do the real changes.
The editor's notes. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, they're traditional types of movies.
Well, that's because the one we saw was on film.
Yeah, and so you know, so I mean, that wins, and you know, the comedy that won was musical comedy, 1917, even though it was shot digitally. I mean. It's shown in a theater, and Sam Mendes says, please, it's going to open wide next week. Please watch it in a theater. You know, that's not streaming. And, you know, I mean, on and on. Rocket Man wasn't streaming. Taron Egerton won, you know. So I'm just wondering if Pete, do you think that's a factor anymore is my question, the fact that these movies are streaming. Most of 90%, 98% of the audience is seeing them in their homes. They're not seeing them in a movie theater. Is that a factor? That's my question.
Maybe, but I don't think they're getting as... I don't think they're afraid of it. I don't think we're over anything. I think we're still in a state of flux, and I think that, you know, we're going to learn more when the Oscar nominations come out later this week. But in the meantime, I think, you know, they're picking the performances they like. They're certainly not picking their friends, because there were a lot of people who thought, hands down, Martin Scorsese was going to get nominated last night, or Noah Baumbach if they wanted to pick a newcomer. But that didn't happen. So it's kind of a wide open field. You said at the top of this podcast, which was very intelligent, and I can't believe you said it, there isn't any like clear-cut front runner this year. And I think this has made the field even more wide open.
Perhaps. Okay, what did you think of the... there were some political speeches. Let's begin with the most obvious one. The Michelle Williams speech, which she basically said... Now, you know, if you watch any movie on television, nobody gets abortions on television shows or in TV movies.
They do.
Why? Very rarely.
Cider House Rules, and that won, didn't it?
Very, yeah. Very rarely. And the sponsors will not, you know, take commercial... will not buy ads on... You know, there was an episode of Law & Order recently where somebody...
Well, was that Jenny Slate movie a little while ago? It was about an abortion.
No, it's very rare, you know.
The obvious child or something.
Yeah.
Obvious child, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, so
that
you
was
know,
brave.
So Michelle Williams comes out and says basically, you know, I wouldn't be standing here today if I didn't, you know, like not in these words, but basically, if I didn't have an abortion a number of years ago, I wouldn't be standing here today. I wouldn't have this career. I mean,
is that what she said?
Well, no, if her parents had had an abortion, not if she'd had an abortion.
No, she, I think the way I took it to say was that
she had a career because she made a choice.
Yeah, she made a choice that she, right, that she had an abortion somewhere along the line, and she and her kids.
That was funny when Gervais said they're going to remake. There's a sequel to Sophie's Choice, and she's basically it's the other one now.
So do you think that she's going to face a lot of backlash from?
She'll keep working.
From, I don't know, you know, right to life groups and stuff like that.
I think women talking about choice is not something not new, really. And not that political. I think that, again, in that room, it was received well. I think she's okay. I think after Me Too, if you're not involved in anything like having asked somebody to have sex with them for a part, everything else is kind of like, what the fuck?
Right. The Kate McKinnon, she had come out, you know, many years ago, but I mean, she stands on the stage and, you know, gives an award to Ellen DeGeneres, and that was kind of nice, you know, saying.
Yeah.
Sadly, she never looked hotter. I mean, you know, for guys.
And there weren't a lot of Trump pot shots, but you know, I guess people urging everybody to vote was kind of like, instead of saying, you know, these actors going up and saying that they hated Trump and we got to get the guy out of office and vote, they just said, you know, you just got to vote and could change things. And who was it? Was it
apparently the first season of what's the crazy one that won that we can't believe? The woman said that her first, if you don't know what I'm talking about.
Oh, Fleabag.
Fleabag. Yeah. There must've been something political about that. First
no,
season.
Actually what, there was a scene in that in which she masturbated to one of her character masturbates to one of Obama's speeches.
Oh, right, right. She does say, I'm an Obama woman. Right, right, right.
Right, right, right.
So,
Well, you know.
I mean, but who hasn't?
Well, I don't know. You know, I'm glad, even though, you know.
When he says time for change, it's another pair of underwear. That's all about.
Was it sorry. Also Michelle Williams who was talking about that women are the largest voting body? And that
no, that was Ms. Arquette.
That was Patricia Arquette. Okay, another speech.
Who didn't need the ditch the sunglasses, sweetie?
Yeah, there were too many sunglasses last night. They were all wearing sunglasses. Somebody came out with these pairs, like plum purple color.
Speaking about pairs, by the way, Elton John took off his glasses because he couldn't read the teleprompter. And
I'm going to beat your
looked
joke.
Looked like an insurance salesman from Dubuque.
Yeah, it didn't look so good. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Speaking about pairs.
Yeah, you talking about the woman who won for best set last night?
Well, there were two. There were two people on that stage that it was like, you know, One in particular was Selma Hayek, where I was like, I was sitting with my wife, and she was going, look, did you see, look, I like Tiffany Haddish's dress. I go, not looking at Tiffany Haddish.
I'm not there yet.
I'm not looking at
and
Tiffany.
And Kerry Washington
all
has,
I
like,
could do was
on.
Stare at Selma Hayek. I mean, it was like, and that's what she wanted you to do, wearing that thing. I mean,
sure.
You know.
Kerry Washington, too, had like a braid on or something, like just nothing.
And yeah. Gwyneth Paltrow's dress was supposedly see-through. But she wasn't up there long enough for me to care.
Yeah.
Well,
I've seen that goop.
Yeah.
I think in the movies.
I think it's kind of odd that you're wearing sunglasses. I'm with you, McCuddy, that you're wearing sunglasses when you're accepting a speech. It's like, yeah, take the sunglasses off. Yeah. I mean, I agree with you.
You're in front of cameras.
Well, I guess McCuddy and I are happy that Jennifer Aniston didn't win for the morning show.
That is so overrated, that whole show. I can't believe my brother-in-law likes it.
I can't believe
people are telling me.
It sucks.
It's really, really not good.
It's not good. It's boring. It's really boring. And I wonder, I mean, for Apple TV.
Billy Crudup is the best thing in it.
Yeah, but I don't think that's going to get. You think that's going to get picked up for another season?
It already has.
Really?
Yeah. No, but before it actually completed airing. I mean, they have so much money in it, they just want to try and get two seasons, I think.
Well, I don't know.
Or whatever they call them.
Is anybody... I see they're giving away a free year of Apple TV Plus if you buy an Apple device. So I don't know how many... I know a shitload of people signed on to the Disney streaming service, and there was an ad list, and if you watch the Golden Globes, coming soon, NBC is going to have...
Yeah, Peacock.
Yeah, that's having a streaming service.
Oh, good.
Yeah, but I don't know. Is anybody signing? I mean, are people like not for that program?
I can't answer that question. I don't know. And I'm not sure they know, because there was a 30-day. You could get it for free for a while, so it won't be until those numbers come in. But I don't think it's. And Apple, all their employees work in sweatshops anyway, so why do we want to watch that?
Well,
that was brutal.
Well, that's what.
By the way,
what Gervais said. He was saying, like,
no, that's what I'm. That's
yes,
who I'm
exactly.
quoting.
I know. I'm saying that's what he said. You know.
How about when Will Ferrell came out with Pierce
that
Brosnan?
That was very funny.
You're so handsome.
And
you're a handsome, handsome man.
And you had Will Ferrell was very, very funny, and obviously. That was set up beforehand because Pierce Brosnan just played the straight man.
Well, he played a pretty good straight man. I mean, I'm sure they did rehearse it, but he did make Pierce Brosnan. I have to give him his due. Like, looked a little uncomfortable, but I'm sure he was doing that intentionally.
There's a big tweet thing after that people were saying that Pierce Brosnan should be the next Colonel Sanders in the next ad. And not one person. I mean, there was a whole, it was trending on Twitter. Pierce Brosnan.
I don't think they can afford that.
Should be the next Colonel Sanders, you know.
I mean, they did.
And there's somebody that even drew a caricature of him, like in the white suit with the little.
It was all comics except for George Hamilton. So they will go into, you know, they've been stunt casting the Colonel for the last three years.
Well, wasn't Reba McEntire?
Yeah.
She was one of them. And I don't know.
Jim Gaffigan. They did a bunch of comics at first.
Yeah, there's been many a Colonel. So I thought that let's go through a couple more of these things. I thought I don't like. I thought
to?
The best performance of the year in any movie, or in any television show, or miniseries, or streaming series,
was Selma Hayek last night.
It was Russell Crowe playing Roger Ailes in the last.
And he won.
And he won. And everybody kept saying, if you were reading the odds on these things. That Jared Harris for Chernobyl was going to win.
Well, Chernobyl did win. And Chernobyl is, I will repeat, the best thing that's been on HBO in the last 20 years.
Succession is one of the best things. Have you seen
Have you seen Chernobyl?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, all of them?
All of them. All five episodes. Uh-huh. I watched it on the
seven
Christmas
episodes,
New Year.
So
no, it's five. It's five episodes. Look it up. Get your facts straight.
Maybe it's 7 hours.
No, they're an hour piece.
The first one was 2 hours.
No, it's not. I just watched the whole thing.
This is like watching a tennis match.
I just watched the whole thing over the Christmas break. Right. And I thought that it's good, but I don't think it's as great as people think it is or that you think it is.
Well, you missed the last two episodes.
No,
when
they had the trial and they put those guys on trial, that was...
Oh, that's when you stopped?
No, that was interesting. But there wasn't a lot of character development for the first four episodes. It's just a lot of...
Neil likes his character development.
It was just a lot of, you know... Oh, yeah, I mean, like, yeah, it's horrifying to see the people going around shooting the animals when they cordon off the area and all the animals and they have to...
Well, I'm going to take myself out of this because I haven't seen Succession. I haven't seen Succession.
Succession, which also won last night for Best TV Drama Series, is incredible. It's just incredible.
My friend's the DP on that, Christo Morse. Hi, Christo.
The first season's good, but the second season is just must-see television. It's amazing. And Brian Cox is great, and Jeremy Strong, who plays his son Kendall, is phenomenal. And what was with the girl from that show who plays Siobhan? They call her Shiv in the show. She was wearing this big black dress, and she was kind of in the shot of the guy who... produces the show. It seemed like I thought
Gervais was going to make a joke about that she smuggled seven other people in or something under there. But
yeah, I don't know. But that's a great show. I was happy to see that win. But back to Chernobyl, I was not a big fan. I think Jared Harris was okay. You were raving about Jared Harris's performance. I thought he was fine. Nothing compared to Russell Crowe. But I was the guy who I thought gave the best performance.
Russell Crowe, Foreigner,
was Stellan Skarsgård. Who
apparently it was all due to those eyebrows.
Foreigner.
Who won. And I was glad to see that he won because I thought he was the best.
He gave the best
performance in the series as the Russian.
He was okay. I thought Jared Harris was better.
Did you really?
Uh-huh. Well, but I saw all the episodes.
So did I.
Right.
Did you see all the episodes of The Loudest Voice?
I did.
And you didn't think Russell Crowe gave a better performance?
No, no, I thought he was tremendous.
See, this you can answer because you knew Roger Ailes and he hired you.
Yes.
So, you know, this I would take your opinion 100% on Roger Ailes' performance in.
I've said this before, but it bears repeating because it, you know, I believe that it's true. He was a much better Roger Ailes than John Lithgow.
Yeah, and way better.
Bombshell didn't do much business last night either, and I'm not sure
that
what that's going to mean.
Office?
It's not great. Yeah. It's not terrific.
It's okay-ish.
Yeah.
Has it gone wide yet, or is it just playing?
Yeah, it finally has.
And it's not really...
Well, it's getting buried. There's a lot of shit out there right now. And there was a piece about how the things like Bombshell are, and to a lesser extent, Jojo Rabbit, although it has a pretty good per-screen average, aren't getting the big numbers that some people thought they would. I mean, I thought Bombshell was like The Big Short. I mean, different director, but it's sort of that same kind of topical, timely, and it's not doing those numbers yet.
I like
the movie that everyone said was dead and a flop and is slowly but surely inching its way back, and theater owners are keeping it another week when they
Parasite?
Didn't. Richard Jewell.
Oh. No kidding.
Yeah, it has legs.
That's not nominated for anything.
Didn't do much when it opened.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. I like Bong Joon-ho's line about the fact on...
like any ho.
Once you get over the 1-inch-tall barrier of subtitles, you'll be introduced to so many more amazing films. I thought that was a great comment.
It is a great comment because a lot of people
don't watch foreign films
because they have subtitles.
Yeah, and I mean, some of the greatest films I've ever seen, you know, have subtitles. And just because they're...
Some of the conversations I've had with you, I wish had subtitles because I would know what the fuck you're talking
there
about.
There you go.
So but, what's the headline for the Oscars? Let's try and think forward with this. Like, what's the... What did we learn
for
last
the nominations?
Night? I don't think they, to recap, I don't think they want to see Joaquin Phoenix. So
you really
I think
you're not going to give it to Joaquin Phoenix because he gave
He's not going to win. He might be nominated.
Yeah,
well, let me ask you this. Okay, the Golden Globes is the kickoff of award season. I mean, there were a couple of award things before that, but like National
Board and our broadcast film critics has been more correct in predicting.
The Critics' Choice Awards is this weekend. Then you're gonna, and it's gonna be televised. You have the SAG Awards, you know. So let's say
we're on the Cooking Channel, aren't we? What are we on?
We're on
the DIY channel.
We're on C-SPAN, I think.
We're on the CW.
CW, I don't know.
So
Arts and Entertainment, maybe.
I have two questions. One, if Joaquin Phoenix redeems himself and gives some really good speeches over the next few award shows, will that make a difference?
He won't. He just won't. He doesn't care. Doesn't care.
Well, let me ask.
And you. I bet you $1,000 he hasn't done any campaigning for it.
Okay, so how's this for a question?
Probably lousy,
so
but go ahead.
Most people tune into the Golden Globes because it's the first one, and it's the Golden Globes, and it's on NBC. Because
everybody's drunk.
And everybody's drunk.
Everybody's there. You know, you got TV, and you've got film.
But we do, too. Critics' Choice does, too.
So does anybody really give a shit until you get to the Oscars? People watch the Oscars because they're the Oscars. About all these. I mean, it's kind of watching a rerun. I mean, you know, you watch the Critics' Choice
I think
Awards,
voting, to answer your question, I think voters do. I think the voting public wants to know what the strum and dang and like which yin and yang and which way the wind is blowing. And I think they watch them and I think it influences them in some ways.
Well, you know, if I wasn't in the business, and if you could take yourself out of this for a minute, if both of you guys, you know, were not in the business and you watch the
kidding?
Golden
we're not
Globes,
in the business
would you really yeah, care about watching basically a rerun of the same movies this weekend?
No,
and
I
then
don't like award
the
shows to
weekend,
begin with.
The SAG Awards and then, you know, just on and on and on with the same group of movies and let's see what he's going to say this time or she's going to say that time or let's see if Marty gets Scorsese gets snubbed this time. Or
no, but on the other hand, the stars use it as the out-of-town tryouts for their speeches. They absolutely do. The untold story for years, because nobody watched it until the last couple of years, is you could almost hear word for word at the Independent Spirit Awards on Saturday what was going to be spoken at the Oscars Sunday night, because nobody really watched the Independent Spirit Awards on IFC.
Best speech last night was Tom Hanks' acceptance speech for his Cecil B. DeMille Lifetime Achievement Award. I thought that was a really great speech.
I thought it was just okay.
Oh,
I thought
that made it more interesting.
No,
Ellen was funnier. Ellen was much funnier. With her acceptance speech.
Well, Ellen's a stand-up comic. Ellen did shtick. I mean, she did jokes, you know.
It's okay. Nice
worst speech of the evening.
I don't know.
It was like she pulled it out of like 100 million speeches that had been given. Was Renee Zellweger's speech.
That was an interesting speech because that was hey, it's been 17 years since you paid any attention to me. Here I am again.
No, but she's like, I'm going to start with my team, blah, 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 blah. I want to thank everyone who's like, you know, it was just boring.
You have to think about Renee's career. This is someone who got dissed for the past few years until this year. She's a little pissed off. So good for her.
Yeah, I thought, I didn't read that much into it, but I thought that speech didn't hurt her at all. Didn't do her any harm.
Yeah.
Well, I think there was more shout outs to the problems going on in Australia than...
Yeah, well, they put that fucking fire out so we don't have to hear about it forever.
Than political stuff. There was more environmental climate change.
Which
thing,
is sort of political.
But nobody mentioned the... nobody made or alluded to the assassination over
yes,
the weekend.
Yes.
Did somebody make a reference to that? Who is that?
Ms. Arquette.
Oh, what did she say?
She said, we're not going to think about the current headlines, and she was referring to the war.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, no, that's what
I hate to say it, but I think Trump bashing has become kind of deep, you know, kind of old school. It's not, nobody does it.
And also, if you
it's
say
just
go out
assumed
and vote,
everybody in there.
If you say go out and vote, that totally circumnavigates him. He can't, you know, it's a very patriotic thing to go and vote. You're saying go out and vote and don't vote for him or vote for somebody else. But if you just say go out and vote, he can't really take issue with that.
Right.
That's true, but he could.
He
who
might.
Knows what he's going to tweet? I mean,
just knock us off a voting roll.
Who knows?
Hey, follow me on Twitter and tell me whether I should stay with Dublin Murders. I'm 3 episodes in and... it's a head full, man. I know some people like it. It's about 76% on Rotten Tomatoes, so not everybody loves it, but it's smart, and I'm starting into it. Hit me up. Tell me whether I should stay with it
or not. Follow me at Neil Rosen Apples and tell me if I should stay with Fleabag, which my wife and daughter seem to like very much and watched all 2 seasons of it. And because this thing won, I forced myself to watch the first couple of episodes of season 1 last night. My wife said... Season 2 is really the great season. And I said, well, can I just go right to season 2? It's a half an hour comedy.
She's kind of a slut, right? She's kind of a...
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't know. I can't comment. I've only seen a couple of episodes. But in the couple of first...
So you should like it.
I don't know. I'd say slut. I'd say that she's very sexually oriented.
Randy.
I don't know if that... I wouldn't slut shame her. I wouldn't say that. But let's say she enjoys sex and likes to have lots of different partners. But
like
I'm not really. So my wife said, no, you got to watch. You won't really understand the second season. You got to watch the first season. So let me know if I should stick with this Fleabag thing, because I'm not that impressed with the first two episodes, you know? Somebody told me to watch that the second season, as I mentioned earlier on this podcast, of Succession was the brilliant season. And first season's okay. So I watched the first season, which I thought was very good, actually. But compared
can
to
I just start the season two?
But the second, no, you can't. But this, you know, that one.
I know the kids are trying to take over the company. What else do I need to know?
No, it's like watching one long 20-hour movie, and it would be saying, can I skip the first?
So the original cut of The Irishman?
Can you watch the second? Can you watch Godfather 2 without having seen Godfather 1? Sure. But would it make as much sense to you? Would you get the nuance?
So season one is as good as Godfather one.
But I will tell you that Succession is probably the best show I've seen on television
since Chernobyl.
Well, no, I think it's better than Chernobyl. Listen, there was an episode in Chernobyl it was horrible. They're going around shooting all the animals, all the household pets. I mean,
what we both bailed on that's supposed to be really good?
What?
And we both bailed on it. Maybe you did too.
I bailed on The Morning Show.
Fosse Verdon.
Well, yeah, I got five or six episodes in. That's a pretty long way to go before you bail. And our buddy who we always...
So that's what Michelle Williams won for, obviously, last night. And Sam Rockwell is supposed to be outstanding. And I will say that
he was sort of
drawn into it a little in the beginning. And then I just thought, this is so inside baseball. And I normally like that sort of thing. And then I just stopped. And then it got more and more and more hype and more and more and more awards, and now I think I'm going to go back.
So here's the show that I bailed on that my daughter keeps telling me to watch, a friend of mine keeps telling me, and my wife is now watching it, and she says another one, you gotta just skip to the second
that
season.
That Broadway show on New York One?
No, it was Schitt's Creek.
We've tried three of those. I tried the first three.
And Chris Elliott is kind of boring, and I think Eugene Levy's kind of boring. And I always love Catherine O'Hara.
I can't believe this thing keeps winning awards and
Catherine O'Hara, who I think is just tremendous.
They're all good. Not
necessarily in the show, but I think she's just tremendous.
By the way, that's Eugene Levy's kid that looks just like him. Just like him.
Oh, in the show?
Who plays his son, yeah. Oh. He's the creator of it.
I don't know. You know, people are loving this thing, and I bailed on that one. I'm like, you know, I don't get it.
There's always, like, one kind of sort of funny thing in each of the episodes I've watched, but nothing that pulls it through for me that makes
It's funny. We both got three episodes into season one and stopped, and apparently season two.
I don't need this shit.
I didn't even start it.
Speaking of The Godfather, before we go, I saw this old black and white movie with Edward G. Robinson called House of Strangers the other night. It was on TV very late. And
this sounds more like one of your dreams.
No. It's from the 1940s, and it stars Richard Conte and Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. from the FBI, if you remember Ephraim.
Sure.
By the way, didn't somebody have a funny Mannix line last night on the Golden Globes?
Yeah. That was Ellen DeGeneres talking about the TV shows.
All these shows that have influenced her.
She grew up on.
She mentioned Mannix.
Right.
That was great. But so anyway, I'm watching this movie about these four. This guy's got like four sons, and he owns a bank, and he's Italian. And Edward G. Robinson is playing this Italian guy with a mustache. And the scene when people are coming to him for money, he's sitting in this bank behind this big opulent desk. And this thing is from the 40s. Godfather is in 1972. I guess they filmed it in 71. Was released in 72. It's the same scene. He's sitting there like, why should I help you? You know what I mean? It's like, you know, I came to
America.
You know, and it's not like the guy in The Godfather who says his daughter was raped and I come to you for justice. But it's like I come here and say, all right, let me do this. It's like Coppola must have looked at this thing and said, you know, it's an Italian family. The guy's came from Italy with nothing. He's like The Godfather, except he's a bank loan guy. He owns a bank. Do you know this movie at all? House of Strangers?
No.
I'm telling you, it's like, I can't say it stole a patron.
Edward G. Robinson in a big mustache is very, almost like the Frito Bandito. I'm totally remembering that.
I think you did. You know what I'm talking
about.
Yeah,
I've definitely flipped by it. Like, okay, one more thing, and then we really do have to go. This is a movie, Billy Wilder's. I'm flipping around
movie,
like you were, and AMC's got Billy Wilder's first American movie. Apparently, he had directed a couple of things.
His first American movie was with Ginger Rogers, called The Major and the Minor.
That's what I'm going to talk about. So get the plot of this thing.
It's fucking great. What a great movie.
It's written by Billy Wilder and a guy, not I.M. Diamond, and directed by, but not the
not
writing
I.A.L.
partner.
Diamond.
Right, not the writing partner he had later. And for
Charles
this
Brackett.
Is, this is a dump the guy. Yeah, okay, great. So listen to this. Listen to the setup of this movie. Ginger Rogers is living in New York. Decides she wants to go back home to Iowa, someplace in the middle in the Midwest. She goes to the train station, and it was really shot in Grand Central. And she's got $27.50 to go home, and it turns out it's $32.50 now. It's gone up.
How can you
charge somebody more to get here than you can to send them home? There's a lot of like Billy Wilder like logic in all of this. And she sees a little kid in line, and that's half price. So she goes into the ladies' room. Comes out as a 12-year-old girl.
Yeah, 13-year-old.
And grabs somebody's balloon and gets an old man to buy her a ticket. She gets on the train. The conductors are on to her. This is all in the first 10 minutes.
Yeah, it's great.
And she bunks with Ray Milland. Ray Milland takes her in, believes she's 12 years old, asks her to sleep in the bunk below her. Above him.
Did you like the movie?
The movie is very charming, but absolutely 100% unmakeable now. Well, and even a little squirm-inducing with all of its charm, because when anytime somebody goes, "Well, you don't look 12," you're like, "Oh no!" I couldn't believe what I was watching.
Right. Well, it was Billy Wilder's first. It was his directorial debut. He had written other movies, but this was his first shot to direct. And, you know, I will just say this before we go about Ginger Rogers, that Ginger Rogers is one of the greatest stars of all time. I mean, people, young people who just, if they know of Ginger Rogers at all, they'll just say, you know, oh, Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers,
right.
Fred and Ginger, you know?
Right. But, and for her dancing, and she does no dancing in this
and
movie.
Look, you watch these old Fred Astaire, Ginger Rogers movies, like, and my favorite is Swing Time. I don't know if you know that one, but she's just...
Tell us all about it, Neil.
But she's great. Just forget the movies. Just go on YouTube and just put in Fred Astaire and just watch the dancing excerpts.
Well,
people
and then,
used to have to suffer through
I will
an
agree
hour.
With your point and say that the best example that this generation would know is that Lucille Ball was a fine, even dramatic, but mostly comedic, but did some drama before I Love Lucy, before she was a contract
they
stock.
They didn't know what to do with her.
Right. So
she met Desi
she's plenty of movies that would not be like that, but that's not what she's known for.
Well, anyway.
Hey, what we're known for is going way too long.
Ginger Rogers won an Academy Award for acting, not for dancing, for a movie called Kitty Foyle.
That's correct.
And she not only, although if you remember her at all, people today, they'll remember, as I said, for dancing. But she had a tremendous acting career. She's a great actress, and she's a great comedian. Despite you thinking, I can't believe what I'm watching The Major and the Minor, she's funny. She has comedic timing.
Yeah.
She's really good. I'm a big fan of Ginger Rogers. Anyway, let Bill McCuddy know about if he's
We watch the crappy award shows so you don't have to. And
right.
We'll have a complete wind-up next week of our own Critics' Choice Awards, and we're going
to
keep track of what's going to win at the Oscars so you can do your pool. Because most of the movies that get released in this first part of the year suck anyway, so we'll talk about some of those movies. But we're
That's right.
Keep...
I'm seeing one. He suddenly
You're
spoke up.
What's it called with Tiffany?
I'm seeing Like a Boss.
And who's in that Tiffany?
Tiffany Haddish.
Jesus, that looks terrible.
Oh, okay. There you go. And you could follow Bill Bregoli on Instagram.
Yeah.
At Bill Bregoli. And Happy New Year again. And thank you all for sitting around talking movies with us.
And talking and talking and
That's
talking.
That's right. And we'll sit around talking movies again with you next week.